They tell me it's going to be 80 degrees today, and I believe them. I think it was 79 coming in, and it will likely, that means it's the insect season has arrived. Apple blossoms are poking out. The pear blossoms are coming out, and I'm waiting for the plum blossoms pretty soon. Excited about that when we see those things coming up. Welcome to the seventh day of Unleavened Bread, the what often as we refer to in our notes, LDUB, last day of Unleavened Bread. So I will write FDUB, LDUB, and we have this world of acronyms that we all live in. Well, happy LDUB today. And as is our custom, we, on an annual holy day, as compared to a weekly Sabbath, we take up an offering. And we do that when we read Deuteronomy 16. And when we go to Deuteronomy 16, and we traditionally do this to remind us of one of the things that make a holy day special. So if we go to Deuteronomy 16, and we start in verse 1, observe the month of Abib and keep the Passover to the Lord your God. For in the month of Abib, the Lord your God brought you out of Egypt by night. It was urgent. How many people get up and travel by night? Doesn't happen that often where you're going to go on a big trip. Don't really have much to pack. You do it like crazy, and you do it. And, of course, it goes on in verse 3, in 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, the bread of affliction. And we keep going. And if you go on down, verse 8, 6 days you shall eat unleavened bread, and on the seventh there shall be a sacred assembly. So here we are on that seventh day of the sacred assembly. To the Lord, you shall do no work on it, no regular work. And then we go on to verse 16, which we usually quote on an annual holy day. Three times a year in all your mail shall appear before the Lord your God in the place which he chooses. And it goes on to list those things. And then in verse 17, every one shall give as he is able, according to the blessing of the Lord your God, which he has given you. So it doesn't say an amount. It doesn't give a percentage. That's up to the individual. And so, and that's normal for this time of year. Well, what I'd like to do today is to go to Genesis 41 and take a look at the story of Joseph in Egypt. The story of Exodus is how the descendants of Jacob or Israel left Egypt. But back when they first went into Egypt, Joseph was the first one. He was the first one. And if we take a look, let's see, I said Genesis 41, and then he wound up in prison. And in prison, he was asked to interpret dreams. And of course, he was only able to do that with God's help. And he wound up interpreting a couple of dreams for people that came to the attention then of the Pharaoh. So in verse 41, now the Pharaoh has a dream and nobody could tell it. And somebody said, and the butler says, hey, there's this guy that could tell the meaning of this dream that I was in prison with, you know, back when times were bad for me. So the Pharaoh brings up Joseph and the Pharaoh explains his dream about seven cows coming out of the river and seven cows, the thin cows ate the seven fat cows. And it goes on. And by the time we have the dream interpreted, what Joseph explained, what God was telling him. And if we go through and we go down to what in verse chapter 41 and verse 27, verse 26, the seven good cows are 7 years and the seven good heads are 7 years. The dreams are one. It's all the same dream. And the seven thin, ugly cows, which came after them, the fat cows, are 7 years. And the seven empty heads blighted the east wind with are 7 years of famine. In other words, there's going to be seven good years followed by seven bad years. So when it says the seven thin cows ate up the seven fat cows. So we go on as this story goes, and the Pharaoh was so impressed that if we turn then to Genesis 41 and verse 38 or verse 37, the advice was good in the eyes of Pharaoh and the eyes of all of his servants. In other words, here's a man who explained the dream, said, you're going to have 7 good years. You're going to have 7 bad years. Well, consume what you have saved. Verse 37, the advice was good. Pharaoh said, can we find such a one as this, a man in whom is the Spirit of God? A Pharaoh recognizing God? Well, that's an interesting thought. But indeed, that's what we find. He recognized this is not a normal human consideration and interpretation. So what does Pharaoh do? Verse 39, then Pharaoh said to Joseph, inasmuch as God has shown you all this, there is no one as discerning and wise as you. You shall be over my house, and all my people shall be ruled according to your word. Only in regard to the throne will I be greater than you. So this is interesting. Now the Pharaoh recognized the capacity of this young man. Then let's put everything in order. Let's prepare for this oncoming disaster of 7 years of famine. Now to understand that, you'd have to look at the Nile River. It flows from south to north. It empties into the Mediterranean. And if some of you have seen the big screen movie they've had at Branson a few years ago, where they had the airplanes and drones go up the Nile and watch. And the Lower Egypt, meaning where most of the people lived, they didn't rely really on rain directly. It was the floods that came, and they irrigated everything from the river. Indeed, today you will see the pumping from the Nile River irrigates the area around. So you look on a map, there's this green strip through the desert where the Nile River flows. And you have this this area of high productivity where they grow grain and cotton, lots of cotton. The British Empire used to get a lot of cotton from Egypt and from India. So it's a very productive area. And so what did Joseph do now that he was in charge of the preparation? And so Joseph gave the instructions. In verse 55, what did the Pharaoh say? Go to Joseph, whatever he says to you, do. That's a lot of authority when he's telling his own people. What had Joseph done during this time? They had saved up a good portion of the grain for 7 years, so that when that grain was saved up, when the 7 bad years came, there was grain enough to survive. They had put in store, they had saved up for hard times in the future. Well, I tell this story today because when we read up in Matthew 6:19, there's a verse. And we're looking at that, and we're saying, wait, how do we make these two, the story of Joseph ascending to the height in Egypt, and how do the importance and the value of storing up for a bad time in the future. And then we read Matthew 6 and verse 19. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. In one hand, we have the Bible saying, make the example of saving, storing, preparing for the future. And then where it says, don't lay up yourself treasures on earth. And the difference here is, where's your heart? Where's your treasure? And that's really what we're looking at. We look back in Deuteronomy 41. We saw that Joseph told the people that they must turn or put into storage a goodly portion of the production of each year. And so now we read this. Well, what about this? Because he's got a point that what's being treasured? Where is your heart? What is your heart treasured? And so that brings us now to the future. Well, then we ask, where's our treasure? Where is our heart? Are we expecting, now most of us have food stored. I do. We all have something, right? Now, most of the world, they eat hand to mouth. If you're in certain parts of the world, if you don't do your gardening ahead of time, you won't be eating that winter. If you don't put in your pantry what you're preparing, that's not what God is talking about here in Matthew 6:19. He's talking about what's the most important thing for you. Because a famine can occur, a physical famine can occur, in which case you should be prepared for a physical famine. But don't put your heart so much on things that a spiritual famine occurs, because then you're unprepared. And so what I'd like us to look at then is this as the comparison. And let me flip to as to what we store up. Turn to Job 36, verse 13. Some people, they store up other things. In Job 36, 13, but the hypocrites in their heart store up wrath. Ooh, that's not a good thing to store up. I mean, wheat and barley and rye and root crops, a lot of things you can store, but storing up anger? How does that help you? Is that where your treasure is? Had an opportunity this week out looking at our new building site, and before I left, I warned the surveyor. I said, "Now be careful. On that side of the street, don't be walking on the other side of the street, because that guy will get very upset." And he goes, "I've already met him." And it turns out the surveyor was using his little GPS unit. And the guy came out, as he does to anybody who gets anywhere near his property, and gives him the what for. And he says, "He has some kind of anger issues. I don't know what he's mad about." But here we have an example of somebody who is storing up wrath, and he's just waiting for somebody to come close to his property that he can really rip into him. But the surveyor did have a chuckle, I will say, and I'm sure he's run into those kinds of people before. So if the ushers would be so kind as to pass out the baskets so that we understand that what we are putting in store is really in our heart, but the church also has an opportunity. They must make good measure or good plans for what they are responsible for. Just as Joseph was responsible for putting together in Egypt what was necessary for the country there, so the church has has a program by which it puts a certain side in store, so that in the event that there is an upset, whether it's in the economy or some sector of it or in distribution, that the church will be able to carry on its normal business without that level of interruption. And so that's critical when we are taking care of what we are charged with, physical stewardship. But really, is our hearts is where the stewardship goes. In Amos 3:10, for they know not to do right, says the Lord, who store up violence and robbery in their palaces. We don't need to be near those places where they have that kind of heart, that kind of an attitude. No. Much better, we go to Malachi 3:10, bring all the tithes into the storehouses, that there may be food in my house. And the same thing is true spiritually. Bring what God expects from us, so that we may be rich in spiritual food and in spiritual drink. And one final verse in Luke 12 and verse 18. And he said, "I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there I will store all my crops and goods." We have to remember, our heart isn't always on the physical things. They're important, and we should be doing those things. But our heart should be on what is treasured by God. And every day is a gift. Every day that we have, and tomorrow, we are most fortunate if we see tomorrow. And we say that every day because God has been generous to us. So as we give our offerings this year, let's be thankful that God has been generous to us and has allowed us to store the physical blessings and has brought to our attention the importance of storing the spiritual blessings.